The Spiritual Freedom Show with Richard Lawrence, where politics is not the answer, materialism counts for nothing, and spirituality will set you free.
Hey, Richard.
Darren. So I think hot on the heels of last week, I think personally we have another revelation, extremely inspiring communicator that we can, who yet again shows us how the Nine Freedoms is being studied on the higher realms.
Yeah.
But before we jump into today's show, I think something very exciting to share, especially in light of the recent UFO revelations that have been made. So I thought I'd hand it over to you for a moment.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that this week, as you know, we were marking the 65th anniversary of the rally that Dr. King held, possibly the first rally ever.
Calling
for governments to tell the truth about what were called then flying saucers. That's the word they used to use.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of the scout's craft shape.
Yeah.
And we shot a video. We went up to Trafalgar Square early in the morning, actually the day before, and shot a video. That's myself, Ayub, and Jamie, which then we put up on TikTok and elsewhere on the day, on Wednesday of this week.
Yeah.
To mark it. And we also had a beautiful extract from a clip from Dr. King giving an ITV interview in 1958. If people are interested, they'll see it on my website.
Oh, yeah, they should definitely go check that out. It's amazing.
It's very, very good.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to mention, though, because there's so much talk about physical phenomena, particularly, you know, it used to be table rappings, and in the great Madame Blavatsky had a number of physical phenomena around her. But, of course, one of the great physical phenomena of this period of history is UFOs. And on that day, in the evening, my wife Alison and I go out for an evening walk most evenings.
Yeah.
And nice. We always pretty well look for UFOs, you know, as we walk.
Yeah.
And particularly Alison, actually. And sometimes it can be, nearly always they aren't. She, you know, will say, that could be, and then we follow it, and then it's a plane or a, you know, something else, an Earth satellite, all the things it could be.
Right.
And we rule it out. And we've had a few sightings over the years, but they've always been lights in the sky. But on this day, this would be Tuesday, the 22nd of August of this week, we had a really good sighting at 8 p.m., almost as soon as we walked out the door, and it was of a flying saucer. It was the scout craft shape. It was grey. It was that, and it, as it travelled, it turned, and you could see that the bottom side, it was completely solid. I'm always very sceptical, by the way, so I spent an hour checking out what drones might look like. Yeah. It was nothing like a drone.
So it was close enough for you to be able to make out the shape like that then?
Yeah, we couldn't see portholes. I mean, there have been, I mean, John Stevenson, one of our members up in Yorkshire, he had a sighting in Fulham at Parsons Green Tube where he actually saw the portholes and the rim of the craft and so on. But it wasn't that close. It was about, we're estimating 500 feet up.
All right.
And we're estimating, it's hard to judge, 30 to 40 feet in diameter.
Wow.
But it was that shape, that sort of flying saucer shape. And I wouldn't even be talking about UFO sightings on this show particularly if it wasn't the timing of it. We had been to Trafalgar Square that day for that reason, and it was a flying saucer specifically, not some of the many other shapes and sizes which are seen now, and you know, lights and sky colours, things that must be extraterrestrial spacecraft, the tic-tac, all the other things that have come along, the cigar shape. But this was the scout craft shape, and we saw it for about 5 minutes. And that was us. 2 hours later, Ayub from Etheria's house on the terrace saw quite a short but definite UFO sighting, white ball travelling along. And the next day, the 23rd itself, at just past midnight, from his flat in Fulham, on the terrace, he and his wife went out and he saw an object as well, a UFO as well, that he said could not have been anything else.
This is
Jamie Bates.
So all three of you?
The three of us who went to Trafalgar Square that morning to mark that occasion all had sightings within, well, less than 48 hours of filming it in the early on. We went up about 7:30 in the morning to avoid crowds.
Yeah.
Stood where Dr. King had stood. And, you know, people can check it out. But I wanted to give this as an example of cosmic cooperation, which I've seen many times before. You know, I've done radio shows where during a show, without going into all the UFOs, actually come down, immobilized a car. The show has actually been lengthened by 2 hours live as a result.
Well, yeah.
You do get these things, but to have all three of us, Jamie, I don't think had ever had a sighting before.
Wow.
Iob has had, I think, before.
I think he has before.
Yeah. I have, but not a clear where I could see the shape of the craft and the solidity of it before.
So. I mean, one thing that I find, you know, maybe it's not, you know, immediately obvious from that, but a lot of people criticize some of the UFO disclosure being made now as just, you know, well, these are government secret projects and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that would not explain the situation which has happened now, which is that we have, you know, put this message out there and immediately has come back with three sightings for the people who were there. I mean, there's no way that could be some, you know, government spacecraft program.
And I mean, I stress, as soon as Jamie and I have told me about their sightings, I look, could it be a meteorite? And we have to rule that out. Could it be an Earth satellite? And so on. You have to look at all the possibilities. The object that Alison and I saw was soundless. It wasn't illuminated. There weren't lights coming from it at all of any kind. Because that's what rules out a lot of sightings.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, there's flashing lights. It's an aeroplane. It was definite, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess the point I'm trying to make, if UFOs were only from Earth, only from our governments, that would not have happened.
No. Exactly. And they're watching us, and they're reacting. And as I say, it's like a cosmic version, I think, in this particular case, because of the timing of it, of some of the phenomena around early theosophists and so on.
Yeah, and I think that's incredibly inspiring about that cosmic cooperation point, because it just goes to show...
than the early... talking of early theosophists, but it's in this particular case, I think it's a very marked thing, and all these sightings were separate.
Yeah,
we weren't together, but within that short period of time, marking that day.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing. I think incredible, inspiring for our listeners to hear that, to know about that cosmic cooperation, and to see that, you know, we take a step forward and they're taking a step towards us as well.
But I just want to put in, for the sake of listeners and viewers, you don't have to see a sighting at all to believe in these things. And what matters is the teachings, the truths. If you never, ever see a UFO, it doesn't matter at all.
And I can say, you know, I've personally not seen one myself.
You don't need
to. Fall into that category.
But this is interesting, you know, in terms of showing everyone, not just the three of us, that they're marking the occasion themselves in that way.
Completely. Thanks for sharing that. So just bring us back to the show then for today. Now, before I ask you to just reveal this next communicator and share with us the message you receive, I thought maybe you could just summarize very briefly how exactly you receive this message, because some people may not be familiar with this kind of
channeling. So just to be clear, we've covered in the last two shows, Dante, Tolstoy, all talking about the Nine Freedoms and Sir Francis Bacon. And we've had quite a response, haven't we? We've had a lot of support, a lot of interest in it. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to pull one more out the bag here, because I sit on these things and I don't want to. It's not about me. I mean, I do channel, and I channel accurately. There's no point saying I don't. And I've worked at it for 40 years, and I was trained by a master. There's a reason. I think people who say they channel should give their credentials. And some of them don't. And some of them don't think you need to. Anyone can say, I channeled this, I channeled that. Why should I believe you is a very fair question.
Agreed.
There are two ways to judge that. One is the credentials of the person and the methodology of the person.
Yeah.
And the other, of course, is the content of the message. So this show isn't about my channeling, but it just so happens that these individuals, and this is kind of the last in the series, really, today, in this particular one series, are commenting on the Nine Freedoms, which is our core teaching. And this particular person, which we're going to talk about, Madame Blavatsky, the great Madame Blavatsky. I she's kind of a hero. Do you say hero or heroine nowadays? I'm not sure. But if it's hero,
probably hero.
She's quite a hero of mine. I think she's an amazing woman. You know, her strength, her faith and her knowledge is quite outstanding. And she gets criticized all the time. But and still, to this day, which is a tribute to her, actually. But she really, really is an amazing person. But she's contacted me, and the message that I'm going to read shortly was actually 3 years ago. But I would like to mention also that she contacted me, and I got a message from her, and I was reminded of this by our technician, Jeremy. just before our first spiritual freedom
That's
show.
Incredible.
Because her whole thing now is pushing the nine, like others on the higher realms, they're studying a lot of things, especially the actions of adepts and so forth, but they are also studying the nine freedoms. This is very important to her, and she, I believe, wants it to be a practical thing. That's one of the criticisms some people make of theosophy, is it's not practical enough. Mm. She's very, very, seems to me anyway, fixed on the idea this is a practice, not just a set of teachings.
Yeah.
And she's been pushing that. So just before our first show, if you remember, she gave a message about half an hour before it of support, essentially, for what we were about to do. And our guest, unbeknown to you and me, the first person he
that's
mentioned
right, that's
in his,
right.
what we used to call the moment of truth,
that's right.
that was Jack Stafford, was Madame Blavatsky. So yeah. these synchronicities.
I don't know what you would have thought at that moment when that came out.
It's very interesting. Yeah, it's like, gosh.
Yeah.
There's a lot of synchronicity around. Some of it's arranged, like these UFO sightings are arranged. Sometimes it's like arranged by the hand of God,
yeah.
I sometimes feel. Yeah. And it's a kind of a karmic expression.
I remember that moment of truth because Jack was talking about an experience he had in Chennai, which is actually where the international headquarters of the Theosophical Society was established in 1882,
right.
and he mentioned Blavatsky by name.
Yes.
So as I was saying, I just don't what you must have thought of that moment, having yes. received that message just before.
yeah. It's great. I mean, yeah. the other thing I would like to say, and I have not been asked to say this by anybody at all, and certainly not any body in the Theosophical Society, but I would like to say that there is no obligation. I don't want to cause any confusion with anyone at all. This isn't official Ethereum Society teaching. It's not actually teaching anyway. And, you know, if you happen to be a member of the Ethereum Society, it's fine by me if you either don't really believe what I'm saying about this or even if you don't know. And you know, and some people feel, yes, I'm absolutely sure, I do believe Richard on this, fine. But it's not a requirement, and it's not part of our doctrine. But I would also say that in Dr. King's lifetime, he did, I talked to him a lot about these things, and he did publish an article in which I did talk about some contacts I'd had. It's in 1987 in Cosmic Voice, and one of those was with Madame Blavatsky. So he was fine with me publishing that. Mm. So that's the background. You can check it out if you wish.
Great. Well, I'd love to hear a little bit more. Also, I mean, you talked about credentials and coming back to that, but just for a moment, just maybe in a nutshell, how you received this message in
yeah.
the first place.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm fascinated. Maybe it might sound arcane to a lot of people, but I'm really, really fascinated by channeling methodology.
Okay.
And
well, actually, yeah. Okay.
The absolute, I mean, I was going to say the Rolls Royce of channeling, but, it, you know, whatever, your Bentley or whatever, the pinnacle of it in history, I believe, is Dr. George King. And I want to make it clear that I don't know, and I'm including in this Madame Blavatsky herself, any medium or any person who channeled who used the method that Dr. King used. I think we've said that before. The method that was used to bring the nine freedoms.
Sure, yeah.
It was completely different. And his back training, I mean, there's one wonderful thing about Dr. George King. He tells you what he did. He tells you how he did it. And then it's recorded.
Mm.
You have it absolutely on the record. You can form your own conclusions.
Yeah.
But he tells you he trained in yoga for 10 years for 8 hours a day before becoming a channel for cosmic intelligences. He was a medium but he not for cosmic intelligences. So he did this rigorous training. I've looked into early theosophists, because the reason I mention them is they are a bit of a benchmark for some of the great teaching that was delivered before the Ethereum Society in a channeled form. I'm calling it channeled. They don't necessarily all like that word. I think Madame Blavatsky comes out well because she does talk about her backstory, some disputed, but we don't care about that. Mm-hmm, you know, she does tell you what she did, which is right. go to Tibet, learn under Mahatmas in the Himalayas for 2 years, I think she said, travel to various other parts. So she has some background in training never mind past life training, which is of course key actually, but in this particular life, because you have to do it in this life. Even Dr. King did it in this life, and he was an avatar.
Right, exactly. That proves
but he
point
still needed to do it, and she did some training. Some of the early theosophers, I don't really want to name them, very well-known ones who brought some great things, didn't have a much training and backstory, and one of them in particular seemed to go off the rails. Maybe as a result. I don't want to go there really, but it is vitally important. And so when you ask, my methodology, it's actually the same things I noticed that Madame Blavatsky mentioned of hers, which is, my phrase for it is psychic mediumship.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I was going to describe what Dr. King did, it would be somatic mediumship. And that puts it on a completely different level from everybody else.
Yeah.
It makes it a much higher state. It means that someone can talk through him instead of him taking dictation, as it were.
Yeah.
Later, he did mental transmissions as well. And later, he only did mental transmissions. But the bulk, things like the Nine Freedoms, the 12 Blessings, were transmitted through his voice. So you get the voice and you also get the accuracy.
Yeah.
So you get the very high quality because he was in samadhi. He can gain rapport with these high intelligences because you have to be in rapport with them to be their channel at that moment. So he could do that, but he also had the accuracy because of his... I mean, samadhi is concentration to the power of XXXXXXX. And so he had the complete focus. He couldn't even remember the message. He didn't even know the message till he heard it back because he was so focused on the state and the accuracy and the condition and the beam that he was focused on. And he's described all this in quite a bit of detail. It's a Kundalini practice. Now, Madame Blavatsky, I would put... and I think now, anyway, she'd be quite fine with this, in the category of psychic mediumship, as I would Alice Bailey, too. Alice Bailey, it's not so clear with her which bits of it are her and which bits of it are...
Because the collaboration, she claims.
The Master DK who spoke through her. And I mean, that might be quite honest of her to say it's a collaboration, but it's not that. It isn't totally, with all due respect... satisfactory, in my humble opinion, I'm not comparing myself to her, but from a mediumistic point of view. She didn't really like mediumship anyway as a thing and didn't regard herself as a medium.
I see.
So it was very honest, but I'd much rather know exactly what the Master DK said
and what she
said. Mm-hmm. And if you can really do that, that takes much more concentration and training, I think, to do that. But that's not taking away from her. That's just. But Madame Blavatsky said she used clairaudience, clairvoyance, and telepathy. And so, to answer the long-winded answer to your question, those are the things that I use as well.
Okay, got it. So this is a message received in at least two of those ways, I suppose.
Yes. So I will always use telepathy.
Okay.
As a minimum, I prefer to use clairaudience, which will mean that I will hear—not physically hear. But psychically hear. And by the way, psychic hearing can be more present than physical hearing.
Really?
Yeah. And so can clairvoyance. You could see someone psychically if you're able to, for example. It doesn't have to be a person, but if it is a person, and they have more of a presence in front of you in your room, you can feel their presence and note their presence on occasions, if you can really do it, than if they were a physical person was in the room. Can be very, very present, but it's not physical in that sense. So I'll always use the telepathy. I much prefer to use some clairaudience as well, if I possibly can. I always will. It's all down to my capabilities at the time.
Sure.
Because then you also, with clairaudience, I do recommend it for people. I don't really recommend channeling, actually, for anyone.
Sure.
I don't think, by the way, anyone should do mediumship, trance mediumship, where an entity speaks through them unless they're capable of samadhi. That's my opinion. It's a very controversial, probably quite unpopular one. But I think if you do it, doesn't mean you won't get a person, but it won't be that accurate because you've lost control. You haven't induced it in a completely positive manner. And I've tried it. wrongly many decades ago.
Sure. Okay.
In the early 80s, I tried it myself. I found I lost some will and I made some mistakes.
Okay.
So
a lesson there. Yeah.
I think, you know, Dr. King is very humble. Mm-hmm. So he'll talk about positive trance and negative trance, but what he really means by positive trance is somatic trance, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know any medium who uses that, who's capable of using that.
Yeah.
So I would keep away from that. So the best thing is clairaudience, telepathy, if you are going down that road. But then you've got to really train yourself. The clairaudience, though, helps you to know that it's outside of you, especially in the early stages. Sometimes you're not sure.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't matter. But, you know, it doesn't matter as long as you're honest about the claim. And Alice Bailey was very honest. You know, she said, this is a collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
And she didn't seem to know sometimes which was who. You still get some great stuff.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was frustrating for the Master DK. That I'm guessing that. I think my guess is he would have preferred it if she'd been able to get him. And then okay. She can do her commentary, like Dr.
Side,
King
like
does
Dr. King
in there. You know what's him.
Yeah.
You know what's Mars Sector 6. Mm. So that, and then if you get the clairvoyance, that means you will see the person. I have done that. It's not on. Mostly, I don't now.
Okay.
But sometimes you do. Sometimes it's very, very vivid. One contact I had was with somebody called Count Cagliostro.
Oh yeah.
Sat down in my office, and it was. I'm talk about a presence. I mean, whoa. Sorry, I'm getting way off topic here. But I was able to describe him in quite a lot of detail. And I didn't know who he was, by the way, at all. And then looked up the picture and, you know, there was a portrait of him virtually wearing the clothes. He must have put on the...
Yeah, for that reason.
For that
maybe,
reason,
yes.
The clothes that saw him in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a very long-winded answer.
But no, I think it gives good context to, you know, how this is received. Mm. And yeah, let's hear it.
I mean, I think Madame Blavatsky, just before we leave her, I think in her, what I glean, because it's not sometimes, like if you take her works, like The Secret Doctrine, which I believe now she would want us to move on from. Sorry, theosophists, but I think she would now. But it was absolutely crucial at the time. And my goodness, she was a brave and gutsy person.
Totally.
And she did it. But she sort of said some of it was memory. That might have been also because there she was, you know, a Russian woman in the 19th, people who don't know who she was, in the 19th century, a divorcee, which would be frowned upon in Victorian England still, probably, by some people, pioneering all these things, on her own. And it was very difficult. And it may be, my guess again, or more than a guess, I think she found it, much easier to give her source, her earlier training her memory of what she'd learned. But she also definitely received dictation, and she also used clairvoyance. So that the Mahatmas, as she called them, would present her with visual references to help her with the writing of The Secret Doctrine, for example.
Almost like showing you a book reference you can use to write something.
Kind of might be a form of remote viewing, or it might just be a projection of an image she needed to guide her in her writing.
Yeah. All right, well, with that background, let's share this message.
So this was 3 years ago now, and I've given it the name Step Forward to Cosmic Freedom. And it is controversial, and some people will not like it. The fact that I'm, both the content and the very
that
fact that I would claim to have a message from her.
Yeah.
I want to say, by the way, she's not an ascended master. I think I should give a little backstory. I have two anecdotes. One was from a man called Tom Curtis, who was actually on Phases of Operation Starlight and recorded the 12 Blessings, was around in the early days. And he told me that she was being taken round the Holy Mountains by Sir James Young Simpson, who was one of the early communicators through Dr. King.
Wow.
And another was Jimmy Gourlay, another very early committee member. And he told me that he was at a transmission, not a cosmic one, but a mediumistic one that Dr. King received, where guidance was being given about the appointment of the next secretary of the European headquarters.
Okay, yeah.
She was present at it. She didn't speak through Dr. King, but she was giving advice and present at that occasion when it was being decided who that would be in the early 1960s.
So she was that involved.
So she was that involved. There is a connection there, and I've always felt it. The experience I had, which the Dr. King published, was when I saw... I had just become secretary, and I was only 26. And I was... Even Dr. King said, you're too young, but it'll have to be you, basically. and I'd taken... I'd become secretary, and I was finding it very stressful. Mm. And I wasn't yet a close friend of Dr. King's. I mean, I you know, sure. He was my teacher, my master, but we hadn't become the friends we later became. And I was quite nervous, and it was a big thing. And she appeared in my room. Well, I could see a black and white photo. I didn't really know much about her then. A black and white image of her, and the words "turn back to Buddhist detachment."
But did you know it was her when you saw that image?
I think I did.
Okay.
I think I did. I think I probably did, but wasn't absolutely certain.
Okay.
And I wasn't trained like I am now in channeling or anything.
Sure.
So I wouldn't even. It was just sort of the beginnings of me. I was starting to become more psychic and so forth. But it was quite helpful, and I now know what that means more than I did then, why she would say that to me, turn back to Buddhist detachment.
I see.
But she, because she was a Buddhist, I believe, herself, actually, in that life. But she, the next morning, I received completely unexpectedly in the post a brochure from which I hadn't asked for, from the Theosophical Society, addressed to me, and on the front cover of the brochure was that very picture I'd seen the night before.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, we were talking about this, and I think I was on the phone to you, the show we're going to do right now, that we're doing now, afternoon. And in my office also is Nikki Wood, who's my PA, who works there, has a computer there. And as we were talking about this, a picture of Madame Blavatsky came up on her Google search. With Colonel Olcott, the two of them. Colonel Olcott was her person who helped her.
Yeah.
On her computer. And, you know, I said to Nikki, you must have searched there because it's algorithms. They wouldn't just... No, she hadn't put anything into that computer about Madame Blavatsky at all. So these are little bits of synchronicity.
Yeah, that enrich this whole story and the magic of it.
Yeah, so that's some of the background. But let me read this message. May the 26th, 2020. Stick to the path taught by the master you follow. I did to my great cost on your realm, but to greater claim here. That is the difference in levels of advancement. So too will those who remain true to your master be heartily appreciated here, even if they were not there. We have simplified our teachings in the light of recent cosmic wisdom. It feels as though a burden has been removed from my shoulders by the simple, direct words of the Master Aetherius and Mars Sector 6, to name two of the most profound oracles of truth the world has ever seen, and yet without unnecessary complexities of explanation. Yet, meditation on their words reveals more depth than can be found in any writings by me. Please quote me on that. I learn from the Nine Freedoms in particular daily by study, but especially by practicing it, as so many of us do here. I once told you to turn back to Buddhist detachment. I now tell you to step forward to cosmic freedom.
Wow, such a rich message, isn't it? There's a lot in there that, you know, I find particularly fascinating how she's sort of like directing people now towards the Nine Freedoms, having been, you know, the person who brought to us the secret doctrines and all these other teachings as well, almost heralding in like a new age of this cosmic wisdom that we have now here on Earth.
Yeah, and I think the reference to... Well, there's a couple of references in there, I think. One is, I feel like a burden has been removed from me, because she was known... She had this tremendous... Which is a mark of real advancement. Real advancement is a person who takes on responsibility.
Good point.
Not necessarily responsibility that someone's given them, responsibility that they know they have.
Mm.
And I believe she felt responsible for, you know, preparing people for the new age and giving the teachings they would need.
Yeah.
And I suspect that, in fact, it's said that some of her, I don't know if they were her last words, but some very final words said, I believe, to her secretary were, you know, please keep this link or something. Do not let my last life be a failure. It wasn't her last life because...
Oh, I see.
She'd have to come back and...
Yeah, in order to ascend.
To ascend. But it might, for all I know, and I don't know, it might be the final life before that. Who knows? I wouldn't know that. But shows her sense of responsibility, and I think that's what she's referring to, the burden. I don't think it's just a personal thing for herself as an individual. I think it's the burden of her responsibility and whether her teachings were sufficient and what she did was enough.
I see.
Now that this has come along.
I see.
That's one thing, and the bigger thing that I get from this is the practicality of the nine freedoms.
Totally.
Something we've tried to bring out in the spiritual freedom
totally.
Show.
Yeah. You know,
they are teachings, they are philosophy, but they are things you can use. And I'm sure let's take the fifth freedom. I'm sure they're using that. You know, on the highest realms.
Yeah.
But she will be on one of the highest realms, I would think. And you know, I'm sure they're applying that. I mean, applying it literally, you know. In other words, practicing timelessness and all the things that are... They aren't theories. They are things you do and things you experience.
Yeah, I think one other thing I'd mention, I guess, as well, is something you've brought out on the show before, similar to that message, is that she talks about how meditation on their words reveals more depth that can be found in any writings by me. We've talked about how you can just go deeper and deeper and deeper into the nine freedoms and continue to mine the depths of this profound cosmic wisdom.
Yeah.
And as your own realization grows, so too does your understanding of what these nine freedoms really mean.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's an incredible endorsement.
And we found on the show, haven't we, the more we talk about it, the more we realize, and on it goes. It's like you open a door.
That's been our journey on spiritual freedom.
It's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, but I think we coming back to the nine freedoms, because there's another endorsement, and this time not from in a literary form,
right?
But from, you know, one of the great. She called herself an occultist. I mean, occultist is a word that's taken on a funny meaning nowadays,
sure.
But literally means revealing the hidden. I think in her case, it's about what's hidden, occultism, and she revealed a lot of it. And she goes, so she's a real. She would go down. I would think, and I don't know. That the likes of Dante, Tolstoy, Sir Francis Bacon would probably defer to her as being even greater exponent than they, although their writing is outstanding, and they're more than writers. I mean, they
sure,
are
yeah.
all mystics in their own right to different degrees.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I found out just haphazardly after doing this week that Tolstoy and Madame Blavatsky had a good connection and that they admired each other. And
when they were both alive.
When they were, and he studied one of her works, The Voice of the Silence, and praised it. And I believe she translated some of his writings.
Really?
Even.
Wow.
I think she did with Dostoevsky too, but he had died and Tolstoy hadn't. Yeah.
I see. Well, I guess it's no surprise that him as a mystic would have been drawn to those teachings at that time.
Exactly. Yeah. But I would like to bring it back to Dr. George King.
And please do.
He was in a whole different league of his own. And because I think even Madame Blavatsky, who is as great as it gets in terms of past individuals of what we now say channeled higher beings, and these were Mahatmas, these were ascended masters in her case. But even she, I think, would say she wasn't 100% accurate. I'm sure very accurate compared to most people. It's very difficult to be 100% accurate, and you have to really work at it. And, I've worked at it for thousands of hours just on working on channeling and nothing else, and psychic development, apart from everything else.
Yeah.
So it's not, something that just happens.
Yeah.
Some people think it is. And if it does, it could happen, by the way, but you won't be very accurate unless you have training. But this really epitomizes what we've got here in the Aetherius Society, and it's said by Mars Sector 6 on July the 21st, 1964. Search as you will throughout the world that we refer to as terror, you will never find greater teachings, more simply given, greater truth with less distortion than you find in and through Mental Channel Number 1. And that, of course, is Dr. George King.
And brings us right back to the Nine Freedoms.
It does.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Everybody, it's Darren here. Thanks for tuning into the show.
Now, if you enjoyed that episode, don't forget to subscribe for more wisdom from the Nine Freedoms. If you'd like to find out more about the Nine Freedoms, about Mars Sector 6 by Dr. George King, go to our website, that's aetherius.org. Richard and I love hearing from you, receiving your comments, your questions on your spiritual experiences, and talking about them on the show. So do write to us, share them with us at spiritualfreedom@richardlawrence.co.uk. Always remember that service is the jewel in the rock of attainment. See you next time.